This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Since the middle of the 15th century, when Sufi monks near the Yemeni town of Mocha first began brewing a beverage from these now famous beans, coffee has become the world's seventh most valuable legal agricultural export. Americans alone consume 400 million cups of coffee a day. That's 146 billion cups of coffee per year, making the U.S. the leading consumer of coffee in the world. This much coffee consumption and cultivation has an impact on the environment, of course. The beverage's worldwide popularity has raised issues around land and water use and resulted in problems with pesticide runoff. But coffee has become a vital cash crop for many developing countries. Over 100 million people in countries like Uganda, Burundi, and Ethiopia, as well as many Central American countries, have become dependent on coffee as their primary source of income. Today on Sea Change Radio, we talk coffee with two leading coffee experts to learn more about the cultivation, trade, and regulation of the ubiquitous Cup of Joe. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Dr. Rainer Bussmann, who is a botanist by training. He grew up in Germany. He studied plants and conservation in the Mediterranean, African mountain forests, and he is now currently the director of the William L. Brown Center, and he's also the curator of economic botany in St. Louis, Missouri. Rainer, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
First, tell our listeners a little bit about the Brown Center in St. Louis.
Well, the William Brown Center here at Missouri Botanical Garden is really the garden's center for useful plants. Anything you can imagine that has to do with plant use. We go out and document what people do with it, whether it's a tribe in the Amazon or a grandmother in the Ozarks that uses medicinal plants. So, in essence, we try to find out what people can do with plants and how that can be sustainable.
And part of your work in plant ecology and regeneration ecology leads you into the coffee industry as well. Can you tell us a little bit about your work in that area?
So there are a lot of different coffees in the market. Some are certified in some way or other, some are not. And when we look at coffee, we see it as a product that can be an ideal conservation agent, because what we try to encourage is that communities grow coffee under a natural tree overstory, not exotic overstory. We really talk about natural forest without any pesticides, fertilizers, whatever you could call it, organic, but even more so, at the same time, protecting the surrounding forests by, for example, not extracting timber unsustainably or hunting important forest animals. So we look at a complete conservation concept when we talk about coffee. And of course, the benefit for the local farmers is that that kind of product gives them a much better price than, call it, mass production coffee.
What's the real difference between fair trade coffee and a cup of coffee you might get at a donut shop?
Well, the first difference is that it might be a different species of coffee. A lot of the very cheap coffee is lowland coffee. That's the stuff that gives you a real buzz, and it also is frequently very acidic, means it might affect your stomach. Your stomach might hurt if you drink too much coffee, and you can't sleep when you drink a lot of that stuff. On the other hand, good coffee, and a lot of fair trade coffee falls into that category, comes from the highlands. It's the original coffee that was developed in southern Ethiopia, and that coffee, first of all, contains a little less caffeine. It's normally very dark. it looks sometimes oily. That's what you make espresso from. But those oils protect your stomach. And because it's produced so rapidly, the water goes through very fast in an espresso maker, it has less caffeine than the cup of coffee you would get in a donut shop. So it's, in fact, a misconception to say that espresso is so strong that you can't sleep. It's actually weaker than most of the brewed coffee you might get anywhere else. Café.
My guest on Sea Change Radio is Dr. Rainer Bussmann. So what's the general margin in terms of price between regular coffee that you get in a donut shop as opposed to some of the more premium coffees and fair trade coffees that we're discussing?
Now, from a consumer perspective, I would say fair trade coffee, when it's sold, is probably about twice as expensive as, say, standard cheap coffee, maybe three times if it's very, very high quality, very good coffee. However, when you look at the cup of coffee you buy in the store, the margin for the seller is much, much higher because the production cost for low-end coffee is relatively cheap, whereas it still sells for quite a bit of money. So if you have low-key coffee, you can still sell that for a good price, while when you have fair trade coffee and pay more as a seller, you get less revenue from it.
In the U.S., we have an organic system, which often takes quite a bit of red tape and an investment to try to get that organic sticker on your chicken, coffee, milk, whatever it may be. And many people think that it's more important to buy locally than just organically. How does that apply to small coffee growers around the world?
Well, I would say certification, of course, is an important thing. However, for a lot of individual small coffee growers or small cooperatives, it has a lot of pitfalls, one really being that it's expensive to get a certifier out there. It takes time. A lot of communities that produce something sustainably are isolated. In the case of our coffee, it would take a certifier 4 days to get there.
And who's our coffee?
Our coffee means the coffee we produce with communities in northern Peru.
Oh, okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that first?
Missouri Botanical Garden is cooperating with small coffee growers in some isolated valleys in northern Peru in order to grow conservation coffee, meaning coffee that is organic under a natural forest overstory and pays a fair price to the producers. We help them to set up a program so that they can sell their coffee on a wider market, help with transport, with improvement of production so that the quality of the coffee is always consistent.
And when we're speaking about local communities, what are some of the bigger coffee growing countries in the world, and where have you been studying it firsthand?
Well, the biggest coffee exporters right now, I would say, are Brazil, Colombia, to a certain extent, a couple of countries now in Southeast Asia. We are looking at coffee in Costa Rica, Ecuador, Peru, now Bolivia, the Indian West Coast, and Madagascar, and to a smaller extent, Vietnam. So it's smaller countries with little production, mostly producing high-quality Arabica coffees, not the lowland variety. And that is where we try to help producers to improve their production and find counterparts in a wider market to sell their coffee.
Way down among Brazilians, coffee beans grow by the billions, so they've got to find those extra cups to fill. They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
My guest on Sea Change Radio is Dr. Rainer Bussmann. Rainer, we're talking about some pretty remote areas for you to study. I can imagine that one of the biggest challenges you have is just getting to these farms.
Right. Just to give you the story, I mean, if you're a researcher and arrive at the airport in the Peruvian capital, it normally takes you either a 12-hour bus ride to the starting point of the road to the coffee farms, or a flight to get there. Then you drive 2 hours, 2 days on not too good roads to get to the end of the road, get on your mule, and ride in for 2 days. And to quote one of my staff members, who is a professional riding instructor, teaching anything from trail ride to dressage to jumping, well, this is not our regular trail ride. This is really scary. It is not a regular trail you're on. There are deep abysses you have to pass, and it is a tough ride to get to that coffee. And of course, the coffee bags go out the same way. So from the farm to the port, they're at least 1 week on the way. And it is in some way a dangerous effort to get that coffee out.
So thank you for sharing your insights on the coffee industry, Dr. Rainer Bussmann. Appreciate you being on Sea Change Radio with us.
Well, it's a great pleasure on my side.
Raindrops in my coffee. What's a boy to do to make the clouds disappear? What's a boy to do to make it clear? Raindrops or tears rolling down my cheek. Raindrops in my coffee.
My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Ted Howes. He's currently the global lead for the energy domain of IDEO, which is a design and innovation consultancy. Formerly, Ted was the VP of Corporate Social Responsibility and Supply Chain Programs for Scientific Certification Systems, which is a third-party certifier, designer, and auditor for third-party and sustainability standards. At Scientific Certification Systems, he led their work with Starbucks and has visited countries such as Zambia, Indonesia, Kenya, Tanzania, Colombia during his work for Starbucks. Ted Howes, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex.
So first, let's start with Starbucks. You were handling their sustainability supply chain. Why would Starbucks need to hire somebody like you?
So the reason Starbucks hires an external party to do this work is predominantly for credibility. First-party certification is a company declaring that they've done something, they've accomplished something. The second-party certification is if it's a trade association. Third-party means it's an independent, non-invested entity that goes out and does the work. And Starbucks came to us because SCS has an incredibly strong reputation over 20 years of designing and developing and auditing against these kinds of standards. And they came to us with a standard that had been created previously by Conservation International. And while the standard was incredibly strong in terms of forestry, ecosystem services, some around integrated pest management, it also wasn't a very auditable standard. And there's a skill to that SCS brought. And given that, we felt we could help them build on that Conservation International standard and create a better standard. And we did that work for Starbucks in started in early 2002 and then built from there. And over time, we became the audit lead for Starbucks globally for their cafe practices program. And I led that. And essentially, that was the role was to train inspectors locally, accredit them against the standard, then audit them, meaning that, you know, you're making sure they understand the standard. You're making sure that they have systems in place and the skills to appropriately apply the standard with no conflicts of interest. And then you go back and audit their work to make sure that what they say they've done is actually what they've done.
So we've heard a lot about how Walmart can be a bully almost in terms of their dictating the prices to smaller manufacturers. Does Starbucks engage in such a practice? And do you see their impact being generally positive or negative in the coffee industry?
Definitely generally positive. You know, when there were the last coffee crisis where prices were going through the bottom, Starbucks was paying way more than the C market price. And they were doing that for a simple reason. They wanted to keep their suppliers in business for the future. Programs like Cafe Practices are a doorway into Starbucks and developing a preferred supplier relationship. So the higher you score against the Cafe Practices Index, the better position you're in to supply coffee to Starbucks, quality and price being met. In terms of the pricing of coffee, Starbucks is competing in the marketplace for high quality coffee just like any other roaster. And so they don't have a lot of control, per se, over price. They do have an ability to buy a lot of coffee. And so, you know, their prices aren't the highest price, but it's more than the C market price.
But they're not negotiating directly, Ted, with the growers, right? It must be the middlemen then and the people along the chain who are trying to cultivate that relationship with Starbucks and keep them happy, right?
Correct. And those exporters are often the ones who are helping to organize the smallholders under the Cafe Practices program and paying for the cost of verification against the standard. In return, they sell their coffee through the program to Starbucks.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest today is sustainability expert Ted Howes, and we're talking about coffee. Ted, we hear a lot about Fair Trade, Rainforest Alliance, Organic, and other types of premium coffee accrediting bodies. Are there multiple organizations doing these certifications?
There are a lot of standards out there. And what you'll see is, every inspector that you work with are probably auditing against a number of standards. They could be accredited to do the USDA National Organic Program. They could be accredited to do Fair Trade. They could be accredited to do Rainforest Alliance, and they're working in all of those standards, and as such, they try and it makes it cheaper for the farmer because they only have to do the inspection once, and then they take those results and report on them through the lens of the different standards. You know, with every standard, there's always a balance between cost and rigor, and you really want to have a standard that hits the most important points. But really, a standard is only good as the people on the ground. Because in the end, you could have the best standard, the highest standard, but when you actually go to the people who are the inspectors on the ground, they don't know how to consistently apply the standard, or they're not as educated in some of the areas of the standard. Like they may not be strong in terms of the social accountability, or as strong in terms of the issues around pest management, and so they may miss things that someone who's a better inspector. And so when we look, you know, one of the challenges that I think all consumers have right now is when they walk through a grocery store, they see this panoply of standards. They see organic, they see fair trade, they hear about direct trade, they hear about Utskapé, there's the 3As, there's or 4As, I forget which. Anyways, there's a broad rainbow of standards out there. And so I would say more than anything else for consumers, it tends to be very confusing. And they have trouble making choices on the basis of those standards. And so certain standards that have certain appeal are doing a lot better for different areas. I mean, I think Fair Trade has done a very good job of marketing itself. I think the Rainforest Alliance has done a very good job of marketing itself in terms of standards.
So each one of these standards is actually
they would be marketing that standard. So they have a vested interest in making theirs the gold standard, so to speak, of standards.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I mean, it's the same thing as in any business. You know, they're looking for market share. They're looking also for markets for their coffee. So if they've gone out and certified all this coffee against their standards, they want to find channels to sell it through. And so the more successful that they are in marketing the standard, the more adoption occurs.
If you were going to be buying some coffee for somebody and you knew that they were environmentally conscious, which would be the preferred label, or is there one?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I have a lot of faith in some of the standards, and I also like the model of direct trade, where people who are roasting the coffee actually have direct relationships with farmers, either through cooperatives or directly with farmers who are big enough to support that kind of relationship. I like that for a couple of reasons. One is it really makes the price the real price for the coffee, because it's not something that you have a long-term contract with. It's something that every year you're looking at, well, how have your costs changed? How's your production changed? And I admire that model because I think it's the most fair for the farmer. And then you can also, if you're buying in the direct trade model, you can decide, well, I really like this farm and I want to see them, help them succeed and be a partner with them. And so maybe you can help them with some capital infrastructure that they couldn't afford to build. And so I think the direct trade model is, for me, the most attractive.
Your breath is sweet, with your eyes I like two jewels in the sky. Your back is straight, your hair is smooth on the pillow where you lie. But I don't sense affection. Your loyalty is not to me, but to the stars above. One more cup of coffee for the road. One more cup of coffee for I go to the valley below.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is Ted Howes. Can you tell our listeners what they would expect if they were going to be going into a farm in Kenya versus a farm in Sumatra, and what kind of differences would jump out at them?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the first is that the farms I saw in Kenya were traditionally fairly large farms, and they were full sun coffee, meaning that there was no shade, meaning that there's no ecosystem services provided by the coffee. Versus going to other places where, like in North Sumatra, where the vast majority of farms are smallholder farms. Their sole source of income is from growing coffee. They grow fairly small plots of 1 to 3 hectares. And that coffee tends to exist under shade, which is healthy for the coffee plant, depending on the rainfall, but also necessary because of, it helps. A lot of the coffee-growing regions of the world are on migratory bird paths, and when you cut down the trees, you no longer the birds no longer have a place to roost on their migration, and so that shade issue is a pretty important one in the coffee biz. It's also one of those things where if you can maintain that shade, you're maintaining biosystem diversity while at the same time you're gaining economic value from it. So that's a pretty good system. And so in a lot of places, though, they're cutting down that shade-grown coffee and planting full-sun coffee because the yields are higher, but also because you no longer have those shade trees, which can have the additional capacity of fixing nitrogen and providing detritus, which helps fertilize the coffee plants and keep moisture in the ground. And you end up just with bare soil, and you have to add a lot of agrochemical inputs to have the coffee produce well. So the value of these standards really is to help ensure the sustainability of the coffee production system. And that's it's a different kind of system than most agricultural products.
The countries that we're talking about are some of the poorest countries on earth in a lot of ways. So does your auditing process take into account when you're going into a farm the conditions of the workers? Because this is obviously a very labor-intensive process, which these people are probably not getting paid. You know, they're getting paid a cup of coffee in America per day. That's what their wages are, I'm guessing, in a lot of these countries. How does that get put into the economics of what you would do as an auditor for a Starbucks, for example?
Well, you know, the minimum wage varies widely around the world, and even in the coffee growing world, and you know, it's an interesting challenge. I mean, you have the problem ranges from, on larger farms, you have incidental labor that comes through for the harvest each year, and what they're paid, and you're generally looking for them to get paid a minimum wage, and then under the cafe practices standard, they got additional points if they paid a living wage to workers. But in a lot of places, minimum wage is hard to determine. I think, you know, one of the key attributes of the Starbucks standard is financial transparency, and getting back to how much farmers are actually paid and being able to trace that is a significant, it was a very significant success. And I think that when you see, like, when you look at the C market price for coffee, it's an all-time, it's at a pretty strong high right now. But it's gone pretty low at various points. And so it puts a lot of pressure on the farmers who don't quite receive that C market price or a premium price. They receive a fraction of that. It's a lot more than 6 cents a pound, but it's a lot less than $1.50, which is sort of the C market price for coffee, $1.50 a pound. I think that's the last time I saw it was around there. And so when you think about the inequities, oftentimes in places, I mean, you're talking about, you know, places with smallholders, they really don't have the capacity for direct market relationships. Oftentimes what they're doing is they're just growing the coffee and selling the fruit of the coffee, the cherry, to a middleman, to a local processor, or to an exporter. And so it's hard to trace back that financial compensation all the way to those smallholders, as well as it's hard to trace the coffee back. And that's sort of a difficult thing to do in the world of coffee.
What's the most remarkable thing about coffee?
The thing that amazes me about coffee is not that it's produced sustainably, which is wonderful, but the fact that it ever makes it into your cup. When you think about, in high quality coffee, every single bean is harvested by hand and then processed, roasted. Sometimes in order to get it to a processor, people have to walk 18 hours taking the coffee down from the mountains. And then from there, it has to be aggregated into larger lots and then shipped. So to me, it's a miracle that my coffee makes it to my cup in the morning. That's pretty amazing when you think about how many different players there are in the world of coffee, and how small those different players are. It amazes me that I drink coffee at all.
Well, Ted Howes, thanks so much for being our guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Manu Dibango, Eddie Palmieri, Frank Sinatra, Ron Sexsmith, and Bob Dylan. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.